as we think about this question of Chinese innovators going global, and in particular, how historically, I think one of your arguments is companies that focused on sales, Chinese companies broadly, but less so on brand.
Rest point.
And how is that changing, and what do Chinese companies need to do more to break into the big markets of the world with branding?
Does this one work? See, that was even easier. Oh, see, I was looking at a red light.
Let's go on.
I like the notion of sage because I was going to describe myself as old and broken, but this is better. You know, I have spent a good deal of the last decade sort of studying how to work more effectively with Chinese brands and to bring them to the market globally. My company wound up in China 10 years ago off the back of the fact that we had a large, fast-growing medical device company whose largest growth opportunity was in Asia and China. And so we acquired an agency in the market. And at the time, I thought it was going to be a very easy thing to take the technology brands that we were working with in Western markets and bring them into the Chinese market and sort of make all kinds of money in the process. And what we learned very quickly was that that was not going to be an easy process, the methods by which marketing were managed in China were different than they were in other markets in the world. And so we took our strategy and turned it inside out and started focusing on how we could help Chinese brands focus on Western markets. And over time, we're hired by some of the largest brands in China to help them with their strategies to come into Western markets.
A couple of things that work.
Sure. I think, you know, I sort of come at this through three lenses. One is, how are you ready to deal with this deliberalization of global trade policy, and what does that mean from a brand perspective? Two, how do you transform from a sales to a brand-driven model? Because inevitably, if you look at the fastest growing companies, once they reach market peak and become the largest in their industry, quality tends to descend and they start to break down and lose market share. The auto sector is a good example of that. But it's pretty much inevitable across a number of sectors. And three is, how do you start to manage brand in a world where basically 12 to 15 technology companies are re-establishing the economic dynamics in the globe, the banks in the US and then their brethren in China. And so what we focus on are really items two and three. Number one, how to think about brand so when that inevitable crisis occurs or that potential downturn, that you've got some brand equity in your back pocket and you can start to leverage that to ensure that you not only preserve market share, but continue to be a market leader. And right now, my observation of the companies that we work with is that they're still doing a phenomenal job of growing off the back of quality and talking about quality and service, but ultimately, they're going to need to look at establishing some of the kind of differentiation.
And how? Just to press you a little bit further, what is it? Is it so-called brand advertising, traditional television? What works in the big markets around the world that you deal with that Chinese companies need to do more of? Or is it viral? Is it online? What are the tools that they need to invest more in? Is it acquisition of talent, you know, getting the top MBA marketers from the top business schools that they don't have enough people with in-house knowledge? What is it you advise as a, you know, their advisor?
I think it's thinking creatively in ways that no technology companies are thinking about right now, which is around this notion of the recapitalization of the economy. So you have these companies which have massive inflows of capital. The profit models are very different from old industrial companies. What the investor expectation is very different. And yet the decision-making process doesn't necessarily reflect the opportunity and responsibility. So I would challenge companies to think about looking at, as you expand globally, look at markets that are actually suffering downturns and where the economy is not devastated, but certainly on its downside, and how you can come into that market and start to rebuild entire socioeconomic structures, how you can start to build brand through being a good corporate citizen, job creation, and social impact and everything that goes with it. You've got to have television, you've got to have broadcast to certainly build visibility.
But you need to show you're a good citizen of the community. And in particular, I mean, it has to be said, this is a hostile environment for Chinese brands in America. Obviously, this is anyone who follows the news. Huawei has suffered the sharp end of the stick, ZTE recently. And so when you are coming into markets, establishing yourself as a good citizen or showing that you support local communities presumably can help with that.
Absolutely. I mean, it lets you basically start to control the dialogue in a way you wouldn't otherwise. Ultimately, if you start to put product in the hands of millennials and people who think about brand first, they're not going to necessarily consider the government relations impact, and all of a sudden you've got an army of people who are your supporters. So at the right time, you can start to activate them on behalf of your brand, and that becomes a very powerful thing. The internet's a beautiful thing for that. When I started offices in Washington, D.C. many years ago, all we focused on was letting citizens tell their stories about why they loved a product. And when we wanted to influence somebody in Congress or in a rulemaking body around a key vote, we would activate those tens of thousands of people who we had collected on the internet who stood for the product and put them to work on our behalf.
Actually, turning that to other panelists, I think both your companies, actually, unusually amongst many companies, are driven by very loyal users, and you have user bases for your products who you could mobilize in this way. Can you talk about, all three of you, you raised a very interesting point, Peter, about you know, sort of the FANGs versus, it's not really the BAT, maybe, I don't know where you put X in there, Meituan, Toutiao, others. We have to change the acronyms. But the big Chinese technology companies, in the markets that you're competing in, when you have these colossal companies, and you're both rising stars, but we've got the big boys already, how do you see the competition emerging, and where is the conflict, and how do you handicap the race? I'll ask each of you to just give a thought on the FANGs versus BAT, and how it affects your thinking at your company.
I don't mean to duck this question, but we have the luxury right now, we never take this for granted, don't take this the wrong way, but because we have such a relatively large market share as reported by others, since we never released it ourselves, we are in the enviable position of being able to de facto speak for an entire industry. There aren't a lot of people out there speaking on behalf of recreational drone pilots. Our competitors, they don't have the sales to justify having an enormous policy team in Washington or building up a giant network of people who can go to the FAA and say, hey, wait, what's this proposal to make it illegal to fly in your backyard without installing a radar tracker, for example. So we have, DJI has supported efforts like created something called the Network of Drone Enthusiasts. If you like flying a drone, we don't care where you bought it, we don't care if you made it yourself, but if you want to stick up for rational local drone policies, join Node, and we're supporting this effort to help others figure out how to deal with local regulations. We're involved in other industry groups like that. We've led the global collection of data on people whose lives have been saved by drones. We have, just yesterday, was the 134th person around the world confirmed rescued by a drone who otherwise would have been seriously injured or dead without a drone there to find them, rescue them, save them, bring them a life jacket, etc. We do efforts like that on our own dime. They benefit the whole. Anything bad about drones, there's a 70% chance it's ours. Anything good about drones, 70% chance it's ours as well.
Right. Okay. That's good. So you let the usage and the users do the talking. You like
your
drones.
And it's putting the strategy that you described in action. No, when our users need the bat signal up there, then we'll shine the drone signal out online, and they'll know that the time has come.
Otherwise, you're flying below the radar, just like your drones, right? Donovan, a quick word from you. We're almost out of time.
Sure. So, you know, before Xiaomi, I actually worked at Spotify, Google, YouTube, Microsoft for many years, so have an insider view as well of how those companies operate. I think with regards to Xiaomi,
you can't possibly be that old. I mean, you must have started when you were in short pants.
Oh, thank you. I think with regards to Xiaomi, I think Xiaomi is quite a different company from all of these companies, in addition to some of the Chinese equivalents. I mean, we're similar in that we're an internet company, and we have a lot of very active internet users. But the way we acquire users is quite different. There's very few internet companies in the world, maybe none, that try to acquire users through selling high-quality, low-cost hardware and building our own channels. You know, Hans talked a lot about new retail. We've opened over 300 stores in China, and one of the main things is that we sell these products for the same price in our offline stores as we do online, all within this very, very small margin that we mentioned, much less than 5%. So I think it's a very unique model, you know, of doing our own hardware, investing in a lot of companies in the ecosystem, building our own stores. We have over 200 stores globally, you know, including in India and elsewhere, as well as doing our own internet services. So I think we're a very different kind of company. I think that the Chinese internet scene is changing quite rapidly, Maybe there was a time when people thought it was just these three companies, but there's actually a lot of other companies and a lot of chances. So we think Xiaomi is very different.
All right. Well, I'm getting the signal from Rebecca, so we're going to bring this to a close just with a closing thought that I think what you're seeing here is clearly very extraordinary moment in terms of Chinese technology companies going overseas. Challenges to be sure, but really thoughtful and quite experimental and innovative kinds of business models that are driving them. So expect to hear more around the world from China's brands. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.